tonight's edition of the Golf Chill Podcast with Rex and Lav. This is not our home studio. Rex, we have arrived in Augusta, Georgia. This is you. I can actually feel and touch you. This is great. This is our rental house. We've been here, what, about a decade now at this point?
With homeowners,
longer than
that.
Susie and Jason?
Because I was figuring it out today. So we've been here ever since I was at Golf Channel, which is going on 19 years now. So it's been a minute.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is a great house. This is the house we're always in. We'd give you a house tour, but that would be an invasion of privacy again. Shout out Jason and Susie, who are so gracious to let the Golf Channel gang in here. Not pictured is Brently Romine, who's currently playing golf at one of my favorite golf courses that I've ever played. That's Palmetto Golf Club, about, what, 30, 40 minutes from here. You and I typically play on the Sunday before the Masters. You had to work, and I've been crippled with an illness that's actually not allergy related.
You don't want to say what it is?
Oh, I can certainly say it. I've talked about it before on the show. I'm crippled with the driver yips. My wife and I played on Friday in what I would sort of refer to as a test run for what I was hoping was going to be a round of golf at Palmetto on Sunday. Played 9 holes, lost 7 balls. Did not matter the club. Could have been driver, could have been 3 wood, could have been 3 iron.
Hate to see it.
Didn't matter. Iron play, exquisite. Rest of the game, exquisite. But I did not feel like killing anyone. I did not feel like having my self-esteem drop any lower.
And good news, you're set for a new driver. So we're set to get fitted for new drivers when we get back from the Masters. So at least you have that going for you.
Literally can't get any worse than it currently is. Longtime listeners of the pod will remember, Rex, the cooking meltdown that we had just a couple short years ago. Set off the fire alarm. It was smoky in here. It was disgusting.
Thought steaks, we burned the house down.
Steaks were burnt. We certainly did. We could not get it under control. This was not that. It was a beautiful late afternoon here in Augusta, Georgia. Made some steaks, and they certainly were delicious. Are you satisfied with your Easter dinner?
More than satisfied. I was just about to put something on social media about it. They were absolutely delicious, but I'm going to send this to you so maybe you can we can pop it up so people can see.
Oh, that's very good. Yes. That's very technical. Technologically savvy. We certainly could have done this a couple minutes ago.
If only instead, we had a production meeting.
Instead, you were just doing it right now. We're obviously going to get to what's going on in Augusta and the start of the Masters. I arrived in town on Saturday for the final round of the Augusta National Women's Amateur, which is very exciting as well. You got into town on Sunday. But first, we literally just finished watching the final round of the Valero Texas Open. Pretty good golf tournament. I felt I was going to doze off about 3 hours ago because it was a log jam at the top. No one was really making any moves. The wind was starting to pick up. It was cold. It was nasty. JJ Spahn was wearing a beanie. Got pretty interesting at the end with the wind, some of the downwind holes as well. But it does turn out that your reigning U.S. Open champion, JJ Spahn, is the winner for the second time in San Antonio, as our buddy Jordan Cornette pointed out on the broadcast. Also won in 2022 for his breakthrough win on the PGA Tour. Win number 3 for JJ Spahn. Couldn't have come at a better time with the Masters on deck.
Really couldn't. And to your point about the excitement of the event, I mean, you had 7 different guys sharing the lead on Sunday afternoon in Texas. I think that's an indication of, first and foremost, how demanding that course is and how demanding the conditions got. I think you and I were sitting watching the final round, and there was a really cool graphic that NBC did about because of the wind in 18 par 5, usually an easily reachable in 2 par 5. It was playing effectively 721 yards. Because of the wind.
And cold. It was about 55 degrees.
We didn't see anybody reach it in 2. I don't think we saw anybody even birdie the last hole outside of JJ Spahn.
JJ Spahn didn't birdie it either. Yeah. He laid up, missed left, chipped on. I mean, it's been hours since we saw a birdie. But again, if the hole is playing 725 yards with all that pressure, there's also trouble short. So everyone's sort of laying back into the same
zone. And it was
zone,
a good leaderboard,
125 too. To 150.
Yeah, and it was a good leaderboard, too. You had Ludwig making a run for it. You obviously had JJ Spahn, who... I mean, he's played decently since the U.S. Open win, but I wouldn't say he's played great. I mean, I think there's a bit of a victory lap. So I think every time you get that win after a major championship, it almost feels like a little bit of validation on that front. You had Robert McIntyre, who I think is a world-class player. I think everyone agrees with that. And then coming into the Masters, you're going to pick apart everything they did. I think we'll start with Ludwig as far as looking ahead to next week, because once again, he puts himself into contention, and once again, he comes up short.
Yeah, let's first talk about JJ Spahn. And I loved what he did in 2025 with the breakthrough, because keep in mind, that was a player who the prior summer was actually sort of looking at his competitive mortality and thinking about it a little bit differently. He was well outside the number to keep his PGA Tour card for the following season. He was wondering what he was going to do for the next chapter And he said, look, this was in June and July of 2024. Look, I'm just going to go for it at this point. I don't have anything really to lose. I've made a bunch of friends. I've made a bunch of money. I've won on the PGA Tour. I've accomplished all of these things. I'm pretty content. Now, we know what happened after that. Got in a little bit of run, kept his card, played well throughout the fall, and then really did have that breakout in 2025 for a player who is in his early to mid-30s, nearly won the Players' Championship. Then we saw what he did standing tall at Oakmont, the golf's toughest test in the U.S. Open, beating, among others, Bob McIntyre on that final day at Oakmont as well. And so J.J. Spaun has talked about sort of the expectations and how they've changed for a player who really, to that point, epitomized being a journeyman on the PGA Tour. Those players don't really have expectations, at least from the outside world. Obviously, they expect to play well. They're one of the best players in the world. They reached the highest level of the PGA Tour, but now the outside's expectations come. Can you contend in the major championships? Can you stand up to all the pressure at the Ryder Cup? What are you going to do in the signature events now that you're in all of those in 2026? J.J. Spaun has had a very, very disappointing season from that regard. He's dropped outside the top 10 in the world rankings, didn't have a top 20 finish so far on the PGA Tour prior to getting to San Antonio. Keep in mind, he didn't play particularly well through the first 36 holes either, made the cut by just a couple of shots, and then got hot on the weekend with rounds of 66 and 67. This was much needed. You mentioned the word validation. I think that's a good one as well. I think just a little bit of momentum to stop the slide, get some perspective, sort of reduce the burden that J.J. Spaun was feeling for the first 4 months of 2026.
And you mentioned an important part of this, the Ryder Cup. I would argue that J.J. Spaun, along with Cameron Young, were the only two bright spots for the U.S. team. He played all right. But I think when you look at both of them were rookies, both of them in that sort of atmosphere, in that cauldron, they handled it probably better than anyone else on Team USA. Again, didn't do much to help the United States win, but I think it's still impressive. The part that stands out to me is, and you go back to last year at the U.S. Open, a very demanding test at Oakmont, and then you look at TPC San Antonio, where they played this week, where he has now won twice. We have the conversation all the time about, does the golf ball go too far? Has the pro game sort of gotten out of control? No one has ever said that about J.J. Spaun. He is not among the longest hitters on the PGA Tour. I think the common thread, if any, and look, I'm not going to compare Oakmont to TPC San Antonio.
I can't wait to hear where you go with this one.
But you do have to hit the ball straight off the tee.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't any room to miss. If you look at TPC San Antonio, you can get claustrophobic with your yips. It would be a nightmare fuel.
Don't even start trying
to hit fairways. I've walked that golf course before. It's nothing that I look forward to playing. It's simply a very demanding test.
Because players don't look forward to it either. It's always on like the bottom five, bottom 10 ranked PGA Tour courses.
It's just difficult. You have to execute so many tee shots. And of course, that was the story last year at the U.S. Open. That's normally the story at Oakmont. I would argue to a certain degree, not comparing the courses, but what it takes to win on each course, it takes someone with a solid tee game, where you're not hitting the cover off the ball. You're not going to see this in strokes gained off the tee, because that's combining distance and accuracy. This is all about accuracy, and it was good enough essentially on the last day, because he probably was middle of the pack through two rounds going through this week. Starting the weekend, I don't know that his expectations were very high, because it looked as if Robert McIntyre was going to run away with it. But then the weather changed. You had to delay on Saturday. Everything got very, very difficult on Sunday afternoon. I think his skill set as a player that's just going to keep the ball in front of you, he's never going to wow you with his distance, but he's going to keep it in front of you. Both those golf courses, now that he's won on, that seems to be the key characteristic.
Yeah, and obviously he got softer on the weekend. They had the lengthy delay on Saturday. Couldn't even get about midway through the front nine before play was suspended on Saturday, just because of all the weather that came in. Did have preferred lies for the remainder of the third round, obviously, of the entirety of the final round. A player who could put it in the short grass with regularity is J.J. Spaun. Diz and Duds did
try it again,
and does now that was certainly very, very effective for J.J. Spaun. I think the similarities were Oakmont are interesting. Obviously, Oakmont, it was penal in the sense that if you missed the fairway, you were in the thick rough and it was an automatic layup. Here at TPC San Antonio, if you missed the fairway, you're probably in a bunker. You could be in the forest, as Ludvig Åberg, we're going to talk about in just a little bit, found himself quite often as well. The other similarity, though, Rex, is that there was a drivable par 4 late in the final round. That was on 17. J.J. Spaun hit what I would argue is the shot of a lifetime.
I knew you were going to do that.
On the 71st hole of the U.S. Open, ended up two-putting for birdie. This one certainly won him the golf tournament on Sunday. the fact that he going downwind on 17, which again with the wind aided, it was about 310 on the scorecard, about 285 actually playing, got a very fortuitous hop, bounced up there to about 10 feet and made the eagle putt to jump ahead. Again, did not birdie the 72nd hole, but that eagle on 17 certainly propelled him. Do you think that he can carry this over this into the Masters, or do you think that these are entirely different animals and it's just good to see JJ Spahn getting at the winner's circle again?
I mean, I think he's a talented enough player to certainly show up at Augusta National and to play well and to get, at least give himself an opportunity. Is he going to be in my list of top 10s going into the week? No. I think my list is pretty much set last week on what we did on Golf Today. However, that being said, this is a really difficult golf course for a player that doesn't hit the ball very high, and he does have a low ball flight. And sometimes it's such a hard bar to overcome. We've seen it time and time again. I don't know how many times you and I had Justin Leonard on the show on Golf Today, and I think you asked him about his record at Augusta
National. Only two top 10s, I believe, in 15 career appearances.
And his take was, I just didn't hit the ball high enough. Like, every time I showed up, it was just, I'm swimming against the stream. The low ball flight worked perfectly for him at the Open Championship, where he won. It worked perfectly for him at a March Players Championship at a TPC Sawgrass that was playing a little bit like an Open Championship because of the weather conditions. But when you get to a golf course like this, it's so demanding on a specific skill set. I think for a player like JJ Spahn, he has to be so perfect and has to avoid mistakes at all costs. Otherwise, he can't make up the difference.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of certain low ball hitters right now, like a Russell Henley's never played particularly well at Augusta National. Shane Lowry's record is a little bit spotty, but Shane Lowry at least has the short game and the scrambling ability.
And the putter.
Even if he does miss a couple greens to make up for it, again, if the conditions are ripe, which we're going to get into in a second at Augusta National, this could be one of those weeks as well. You could talk about Bob McIntyre. I think first and foremost about Ludvig Åberg, player who I did put last week in my top five favorites for the Masters, sort of owing to what he had done over the past couple months in the PGA Tour. We saw with the close call at the Players Championship. What did you see on the weekend from Ludvig that either made you encouraged about what he could do at the Masters or potentially a little bit pessimistic now about his chances?
I had to do the math in my head. I think he was sixth or seventh on my list. I'd probably have to go back and check. Yeah. He was not in my top five.
He was fifth for me.
And I think he was sixth or seventh on my list, maybe even eighth, because, look, he's a world-class player. He stands on every tee box, and he's going to hit where he's looking. And I think everybody on the PGA Tour probably watches him hit balls on the range and thinks to themselves, how does he not win every single week? All that being said, he seems to be missing some sort of gear, and it's a very, very small sample set. I don't think we're going to sit here and write off that, oh, he can't get it done on Sunday, because he has gotten it done on Sundays before.
He is accumulating a little bit of scar tissue.
He is, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I don't know that Augusta National is necessarily the place you come looking for answers. You hope to show up on Magnolia Lane knowing everything you need to know about your game and this particular golf course. So, no, I'm not going to change where he is on the list. I think six or seven is about right because, again, even if he's somewhere close to the lead going into Sunday here at Augusta National, which I'm not going to be surprised at all because of everything, he does hit the ball high. He does hit the ball far. He has the skill sets to play this golf course well. However, still need to see him get it done, not just at a regular tour event, like at the Texas Open, but certainly at a major.
Yeah, like I could easily foresee us sitting 6 days from now on the eve of the final round of the Masters with Ludvig Åberg leading by two shots. Like, that's just sort of the state of his game right now. He did play the week ahead of the Masters. If you look at
and you're going to announce coronation or class,
you can book it. If Ludvig Åberg is leading at the end of the final round, we're going to have coronation or collapse? Ludvig Åberg leads on the final day of the Masters. But I could easily foresee that just because of how he's played right now. The driving of the golf ball. We're going to get into Sunday and what happened at TPC San Antonio. But typically, that has been one of his strong suits, and he has been. He has at least, again, prior to Sunday, figured out some things with his iron play as well. He was scattershot all over the place to begin this year. The work that he's done with his swing coach has certainly gotten that ironed out. However, as much as I could see him contain through 54 holes, I could also see the scenario, Rex, where the narrative on Sunday is relentless and it is overwhelming and it is suffocating of, can Ludvig Åberg actually hold on to the lead and win a golf tournament? And again, he has done it in his career. First PGA Tour event he won. RSM, you were there, 61-61 on the weekend to win. We saw what he did at the European Masters, needing to impress European Ryder Cup captain Luke Donald, one final audition to make that team as a player who was just fresh out of college. Went out and went low on Sunday, to win that golf tournament as well. We saw what he did at Torrey Pines just a couple years ago, 65, 66 on that Sunday to win a signature event in the PGA Tour. He can do it. However, we also now have some accumulating scar tissue as it relates to
the PGA.
He has blown both flagship events on both the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. We saw what he just did at the Valero Texas Open. There are now at least three or four other examples of Ludvig Åberg, again, in a pretty short career, just 26 years old, of him not being able to get it done, a little bit skittish under pressure, a little bit quick under pressure. He's a fast player anyway, gets a little bit quicker. When you look at what happened Sunday at TPC San Antonio, it's going to look okay on Wikipedia in a couple of years. It's going to look like a tie for fifth at the Valero Texas Open. It's going to look like he shot a final round 70 on Sunday. If you dig in that scorecard, it is ugly. Birdie three of his last five holes just to get to this position. Just hit six greens in regulation. Hit just seven fairways in regulation. It seemed like he finally found the equilibrium in the round once he was well out of it. And he had absolutely no opportunity to win the golf tournament. When you look at sort of the midway point of that round, and again, he was doing well just to be in that position. Chipped in twice over his first five holes just to maintain that position on the leaderboard. He was left. He was right. Yeah. He was pitching out sideways. He was hitting it everywhere on a golf course that is very penal. Now, the optimist in you can say, look, he hit it all over the place at a difficult driving golf course. When he gets to Augusta National, all of a sudden those corridors are going to look much wider comparatively. And again, I really do think he is going to play well. Look at what he's done in his two trips around Augusta National previously. 2024, had an opportunity to win that golf tournament, hit in the water on 11, ended up making double bogey and lost the golf tournament there. Last year, when Roy McIlroy had his difficulties on 13, Ludvig Åberg was tied for the lead late on the second nine. People forget this. It was Rory, it was Justin Rose, and it was Ludvig Åberg who were in the mix. Again, he faded just like he did the year prior. So there are some examples of him playing well at Augusta National. I think there's also, Rex, some examples that he's going to have to sort of fight the demons and fight some of his past history.
And I'm going to push back a little bit on the narrative. And I think you said this the other day, that you can hit it all over the lot at Augusta National. The fairways are large, but depending on where the pin is, you need to be in a quadrant.
Oh, I don't think you can hit it all over the place. I think Bryce DeChambeau's early lack of success is indicative of that.
So no, I'm not buying into, well, no, if he's not driving it well, at least he's coming to Augusta, a place that's got big fairways. I don't buy that, because if you're going to take advantage of the holes where you need to take advantage of, you need to be in the right part of the fairway. That's the genius of Augusta National. Now, it is a second shot golf course, to your point, but you need to be in the right spot to execute.
Yeah, angles are important.
And to execute those right shots. So I don't particularly like it when people say that, oh, they've got these huge fairways. Yeah, you and I could go out and play it and certainly enjoy it. You with your yips, me with whatever it is I'm dealing with. But I don't think the normal PGA Tour pro looks at it that way. And to play armchair psychologist just for a minute, and these are Ludvig's words, not ours, that on Sunday, TPC Sawgrass, he admitted he got quick. And that's sort of his MO in a situation. I'm just not talking about him playing quick. His swing got quick. The idea that he just finds the rhythm that he normally is in, the one that we all love to watch him swing. He's this picture of perfection when he swings the golf club. It's just not quite perfect when he gets under pressure. I don't imagine that there's a bigger pressure point right now for him in his career than to find himself in the contention on Sunday at the Masters. It would be so cool to watch him in that situation, having this conversation on a Saturday night leading into the final round. I just don't know how I would feel about it.
Well, I mean, there's clearly people who are pro Ludvig and think he's eventually going to be the number one player in the world. I think he also has some skeptics, because for all the hype that he's received, his resume to this point is still a little bit paltry. Again, for a player who is not that young, when we're looking at sort of the young guns on the PGA Tour. So I can sort of see both sides. You would have loved, if you were pro Ludvig, to see him have a different Sunday at the Valero Texas Open. Specifically based on what we saw just 3 weeks ago at TPC Sawgrass, and the way he was up by two, what happened on 11 and 12, going 6-6, again, to blow himself out of the golf tournament. Like, he's going to factor heavily, in my opinion, this coming week at the Masters. Curious to see how he handles the weekend in particular. All right, I have been in Augusta for more than 24 hours. This is your first day on property. I'll start, Rex, just from having covered the final round of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It was a little bit soft, which is sort of surprising. We're in a drought here in Georgia, just as you and I are a drought back home in Florida. I would anticipate the golf course continually getting firmer, faster and fierier as we get through Masters Week. The forecast looks absolutely perfect. Highs between 67 and 77. No rain in sight. It was spritzing earlier today. I was firing up the grill. It was spritzing there. I did have at least a 10 to 15 minute downpour yesterday after play ended of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. So again, nothing that was going to significantly alter the golf course, but you could see some of the softness as it played out. And I think that obviously played out on the 12th hole as well, which you saw with Maria Jose Marin, her ball staying up on the bank
Fred
on
Couples. 12,
a la Fred Couples in 1992, while Astris Tally, who I think is going to be a big star on the LPGA one day, airmailing it long, unable to get enough spin on the green. Her ball does not hang up, rolls off the front edge, not once, but twice, makes a quad and loses the golf tournament. So you've been just on property for a couple of hours. Drive, chip, and putt was going on Sunday. Your impressions as we get Masters Week underway.
I would also recommend everyone. How many words was that tally feature of yours?
1,300.
Do you think you had 1,300 people actually read that story?
God, I hope so.
That's got to be the litmus test.
Bryson DeChambeau did figure prominently in the story. If you guys missed this, and there's probably going to be some skeptics and some cynics as it relates to this story. Nah. Bryson DeChambeau was on property on Saturday at the Augusta National Women's Amateur, cheering on the 30-something competitors that you had for the final round there, but also, Rex, to see Astris Tally, who he has known for about a decade now, came out to support her. If you didn't see it, she was leading by two shots heading into the final round, ended up shooting 75 and blowing the golf tournament. Bryson gave her a hug as she walked off 18 in tears, cried all the way to the scoring building, cried when her parents came out, cried when we interviewed her in the flash area. Again, read the story. I was very, very impressed with how she conducted herself in that situation. But Bryson DeChambeau, to his credit, waited out the 15-minute interview scrum. There were no cameras around. There was no photographers. There was maybe 10 other people just waiting, and gave her a pep talk that I wrote that he resembled more like a high school football coach. He was this close to her, and he's pointing at her. He's pointing at her chest and her heart. He's pointing back down the golf course, like this impassioned plea, turned around at one point to like, see, look how you're inspiring this young girl. She's sitting there all smiley, waiting for an autograph. Like, it was really, really cool. And there's probably people are going to be like, oh, this is just a show. He didn't really mean it. And I don't know. I'm not in Bryson's mind. I'm not in his heart. I don't know what he was thinking or what he was doing. All I know is what I saw. And this is a guy who really cared. He was there for a young player, a young phenom, a potential young superstar who really needed some guidance and support and some consoling in that moment. And Bryson DeChambeau delivered. I thought that was really cool.
And you mentioned the actual winner, Jose Maria Marin, in the 11th paragraph?
Probably a little bit later than that. We are receiving some intel from Fred here that 13,000 people clicked on that. That'll likely be more than any sort of blogs that you're slapping together this week.
I'm saying 13,000. I mean, that's pretty good considering you wrote 1,400 words.
shout out to all my friends in Canandaigua, New York, my hometown friends who are reading that story. What's on your mind, Rex?
You asked me about the golf course. Yeah. I'm sorry, I got sidetracked. You're right. A little bit of rain today, as you pointed out, rain last night. It did seem a little bit on the softer side today, but essentially what we could tell. But I was talking with Gary Woodland's caddy today as they came off the practice area. The idea that his take immediately was they can do whatever they want here. Like, that's it. I mean, they had the magical touch when it comes to this golf course. I'm not quite sure any other golf course in the world can just wave the magic wand and be like, nope, we want firm and fast. Ding! And that's what's going to happen. Or if they want to throw a ton of water on it and make it soft and make it gettable, which is what they normally do on a Saturday. I mean, the third round is kind of defined. I'm sorry, I got it backwards. The third round is usually the difficult day, but certainly Sunday afternoon on the second nine is the one where they're going to make it a little bit softer. They're going to put pins in position guys can go at. They know the secret sauce is allowing guys to score, especially on the second nine on a Sunday afternoon. So I think the golf course, the conditions-wise, to your point, the forecast, is absolutely perfect for what they want, but they would get there eventually.
Yeah, they would get there eventually. This one at least will be natural. They don't have to do anything forced. Mm-hmm. I think players will know what to expect as the week drags on as well, which I think is going to be a very, very good thing. We talked about some of the players. We had the mysterious absence from Scottie Scheffler, who had to withdraw early prior to the tournament at the Houston Open. Turns out, yes, he did have a second child. His son, Remy, was born 9 days ago, already on property at Augusta National. I have friends who have dreamed their whole life of being at Augusta National.
And yet,
Remy, just 9 days old, is already on property. So that storyline is behind us. We don't have to worry about that. I think the big question as it relates to Scottie Scheffler is, what sort of Scotty are we going to see? Are we going to see the player who was a little bit off with his ball striking at stages of the West Coast swing as well as stages of the Florida swing? Or are we going to see the player who we saw for much of 2025, who was absolutely dialed in, who is finding fairways with regularity, who is really pinpoint precise with his iron play? I think that's the big question right now.
And I think, and again, we're guessing entirely here because we have no idea what Scottie Scheffler has spent the last essentially 2 weeks since the Players' Championship doing. But with a son born 9 days ago, I think it's safe to say he's spending it with his family. He's doing what a father would do, a good father. I mean, he's made it perfectly clear.
Tar poops. A lot of tar poops in those first couple days.
So gross. But they don't stink.
No.
That's the good part about it. It's just disgusting. Yes, it's so disgusting. And then you get the volcanoes. Anywho, that's a whole different conversation. But the one thing that we do know about, well, the two things we do know about Scottie Scheffler, he is a family man. That's where the priority is, not with his golf. He's made this perfectly clear. And two, he's a creature of habit. And when he comes into Augusta or any other major or any other event, for that matter, he wants to be completely prepared. I've heard him give this speech before, whether if it's in a press conference or him talking to junior golfers, that I need to show up knowing I've done everything I possibly can to be ready for this moment. That way I'm not worrying about anything. I can just go through my paces and walk out there. That's not to say I don't think he's going to contend. I'm probably going to mix my list up. I don't think I'm going to put him number one on the list I'm going to dole out on Wednesday.
He's
not going to drop far. Well, I kind of have two reasons on that front, but we can get into that later. But when it comes to Scottie, you and I both know, like, he wants to be prepared. He's a creature of habit. He wants all of the boxes checked off before he drives down Magnolia Lane. And I just don't know how that's possible, given all the demands, I call them demands, given all the opportunities in his life. Like, he wants to be at home with his
good
family.
Good save.
Demands.
Bunkmate, if you're watching, that's Rex's wife. Yes, he called them demands.
Demands.
Demands on his time after having a baby. I will say, though, Rex.
I named my demands. No, never mind.
I'm sort of having deja vu because Bennett, the Scheffler's first child, did arrive about a week and a half prior to the PGA Championship that year. And if you look at how Scottie Scheffler played, yes, he got arrested on that Friday. The opening round was good. Obviously, he had the great round on Friday. I think he probably would have won that golf tournament if not for the emotional letdown that he experienced on Saturday. No one was talking about rust. No one was talking about a lack of preparation. That was, again, his first child, not really knowing what to expect.
I don't even know if I recall
everyone is
rust.
Going at the whirlwind as well. Just like a lack of preparation or having, yes, you know, it's sort of a discombobulated personal life. Obviously, I understand he likes things in a neat little basket. I understand that he likes doing the exact same thing every single day and keeping his life very, very simplistic, having a very detailed, consistent regimen practice-wise. Totally understand that. But I do think we have an example about a week and a half break that Scottie Scheffler had between having his first child and a major championship. It did not seem to affect him there. Again, I think it's, can he or has he and his swing coach, Randy Smith, and you and I had him on Golf Today last week, can they come to some sort of understanding of what has gone wrong in Scottie Scheffler's game that has gotten him just a little bit off? Again, it's not far off, but just some of the numbers off the tee, proximity of the hole, are un-Scottie Scheffler-like. He can still win golf tournaments hitting it like this, but he's not going to have the 3, 4, 5 shot wins that we saw in 2025 and prior if he's hitting it like this, because he just can't separate the way that he's used to.
And this is a combo deal. Like, it's the birth of the second child, and certainly that's going to be a pleasant distraction, but a distraction nonetheless.
Demands. So many demands, demands on this time.
And there's also the fact that if you look at his last two starts at Bay Hill and TPC Sawgrass, I think both you and I have pointed out statistically, that's not what he does. That isn't his strong suit. He was much more middle of the pack, strokes gained tee to green, essentially, than he was to first by a long shot. And that, to me, is the bigger question, because that has been what separates him from everyone else. And if you're going to be pedestrian there, then you're going to have to make up for that somewhere else. And that's not where his strengths are.
Yeah, I think you could see that. I mean, you can also spray it anywhere at Augusta National, I've heard.
Sure, yeah.
So it doesn't even matter.
That's what I hear. If fairways are so big, you could play it.
If he's a little bit more erratic off the tee. I go back, Rex, to last year where Scottie Scheffler was, I would think, much more off on his game than he is right now a year ago at this time. And yet he still finished in the top five at the Masters and had an opportunity to win as well. Was he frustrated? Sure. Did he understand that he was not hitting it all that well? Absolutely. He still knows how to play the golf course. He's shown that already with two green jackets. Scotty Scheffler is going to be in the mix once again. So if Scotty is not your number one, please enlighten us who actually is.
And I don't think it's probably just me reordering those top three, what we talked about. We did a top 10 list on Sunday's podcast that aired on Monday on Golf Channel. And my guess is just one through three for me. And the reason why, one, the long conversation we just had about Scotty Scheffler. And two, I actually talked to a tour pro that lives in Scottsdale that's played some golf with John Rahm recently out. And he said, I can't imagine how he doesn't win the Masters. Says he doesn't miss shots. And he's hitting everything you have to hit at Augusta to play well. And I also think maybe John has something to prove. That maybe, and it's hard to put this into context because it inevitably this turns into an us against them conversation, a PGA Tour versus LIV conversation. And I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's what this is about. I think this is John Rahm wanting to be at the top of the pecking order again, where he was for a very long time, and wanting the spotlight. I mean, one thing that connects every top PGA Tour player,
Alpha.
I would say any PGA Tour player, is they have the let me show you gear that they want to prove to you that, no, I can hit that shot. Give me, just watch. And I think John Rahm and Scotty Scheffler and Rory and Bryson, they have it in spades. They have more of that gene, whatever it is, that drives a tour player. I think he would love the opportunity, nothing more, than to come here and to show the world that, yep, I'm still John Rahm.
Yeah. Hey, remember me? John Rahm, one of the best players of his generation. I can certainly see that argument. You look at statistically, Rex, in 2026, John Rahm, from a strokes gain perspective, has played better than anyone. I don't care if PGA Tour or LIV. It's John Rahm who is number one and playing the best right now. Could absolutely see that scenario as well. And so I think there certainly are more questions heading into this year's Masters than we've had in recent years. Like, I go back to, if you sat here right now on Sunday, April 5th, who would you name as the 2026 PGA Tour Player of the Year?
Oh, my.
Correct. It is that's the exact reaction, because you've had 3 months of PGA Tour golf and no one has really separated themselves. Matt Fitzpatrick has played great golf.
Yeah.
He had a second place finish at the Players' Championship, won the following week.
It'd be easier for me to name the LIV Player of the Year. That would be Bryson DeChambeau after back-to-back wins, but you're right. That one's kind of tough on the PGA Tour.
And John Rahm has won a tournament as well. Lost a couple close
hasn't
calls.
Hasn't finished outside the top five.
Yeah. So, like, I think that's a much easier conversation. On the PGA Tour, there's been a lot of parity. There's been a lot of up and down play. Rory McIlroy, again, in the limited sample size that we have on the PGA Tour, has been good, not great, even if the stats and the outlier, sort of the subliminal numbers look okay. And so that's why I'm really excited about this week. I'm excited about the weather forecast and how they're going to get the golf course exactly that a ball striker, the best ball striker, should be able to separate himself in those sorts of conditions. But I'm also really curious to see what happens. I'm curious to see if Scotty did find his game. I'm curious to see if what we've seen for Rory over the past 3 months has been a little bit of an aberration, and if something was unlocked mentally based on him getting over the finish line a year ago at Augusta National. I'm curious to see if Cam Young can do it once again in a major championship with the number of close calls that he's had a couple years ago in some of the other majors. I'm curious to see if this is Matt Fitzpatrick's time based on the way he's played over the past month or so. I'm looking to see if Xander Schauffele, again, we've seen it in spurts at the Players, Sunday at the Valspar. Is he ready to recapture some of that 2020 form as well? Bryson DeChambeau, he's played so well at Augusta National. It seems like he's figured something out, particularly on the greens at Augusta National. But is he now ready to join the most exclusive club in golf? It's going to be a lot of fun. Some breaking news, Rex, into the newsroom. You and I are going to be having a newsletter that is going to be delivered to you, the golf fan. If you want to subscribe, make sure you're looking out for this. We're going to be sending a test email early on in the week. Make sure you're getting those newsletters. We're going to be dropping one. We're going to be writing it on Wednesday for Thursday. We're going to be doing one at the halfway point Friday for Saturday. If you're following along, we're also going to do one in the final round Sunday for Monday.
What?
So make sure you are subscribed to the Golf Channel newsletter. It is literally going to be called Live From with Rex and Lav. It's going to be a newsletter. We're trying this out at the Masters this year. If it all goes well, we'll be doing it for all of the major championships and the cup events as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. You and I, our instant analysis, our breakdowns, our commentary, news, notes, numbers to watch, linking out, expert analysis that you can only get from us, which is, again, is going to be different from the podcast that we do as well. So that's part of our schedule of events. This week, you and I will be doing the podcast, the preview podcast, as usual, on Wednesday. We'll also be doing mini pods live on YouTube on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. For, of course, we do the 52-minute edition made for TV Sunday night and airing on Golf Channel on Monday. You and I are also going to be busy boys on television, beginning with Live from the Real Edition, not the newsletter. That's going to start on Monday. You're going to be the Live from Early reported. Do you mind telling the folks exactly what that means and what your duties are going to be during the Masters?
It's early, not late. Yes. The reporter, Todd Lewis, would be the late reporter. I would be the early reporter. I think it's as simple as that. Doing interviews, doing updates, doing hits from the first fairway. That's where the live shot is. Just kind of keeping everyone up to date on exactly what's going on at the Masters.
And I'll be doing some commentary analysis sitting on the desk with Paige McKenzie, Aaron Olberholzer, Damon Hack, Steve Sands, our buddy and podcast guests as well. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Steve might have notes.
He's not going to have a rundown. He's not going to have any notes. He's going to be doing it all up here. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. We're so excited to get the 90th Masters underway. Our coverage begins on Monday, golfchannel.com, Golf Channel YouTube, and Golf Channel, yes, the TV channel. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. We'll talk to you guys on Wednesday. And make sure you sign up for that newsletter. It's going to be awesome.
It's news to me.